Hi, this is Stan the Man, and I approve this message. Are you ready to launch your own podcast? Look no further. Introducing the Ultimate Guide to Launching Your Podcast in ebook and audiobook form. Discover insider tips, strategies, and everything you need to make your podcast a hit. Don't miss out. Get your copy now and turn your podcast dreams into reality. I'm Stan the Man, and I approve this message.
Hello, everybody. Stan the Man here. Thanks for joining us for another podcast. And this is our first inaugural starting out where you get to see the video. And of course, I'm very excited and happy to have with me today the one and the only, the lady that is now in the banking industry, Heather Cunningham Johnson. How you doing?
Well, that introduction, I feel like I should do a dance or jazz dance or something. Thank you.
Maybe we can save that for another day. Speaking of dancing, your girl Beyonce dropped her album today, and I'm like, I'm not disappointed at all. I just, you know, like most people, listen to the first one. The signature one, and I saw who else she's having on there. Dolly Parton's going to be on there with her.
Yes.
And Dolly has a rock album out now. I don't know if you heard of it, but it's pretty good. It's just basically it's rock songs.
I didn't know that.
So I'll
but you know, I've been listening to my girl all day. So
most definitely. So I'll be listening to that. So we're going to jump right into it. And as I mentioned to my audience, you do work in the banking industry. So my first question to you is going to be, can you share with us your journey and how you came to hold the position in banking, and how does it get focused and how does that work for you?
So, well, first of all, I have to say, it's an honor to be on your podcast, Stan. I listen to you and you have a lot of practical information for the audience out there. So thank you. I'm honored to be here. It's my first ever podcast. So thank you for breaking me in.
No problem.
And to answer your question, so I am a risk and compliance professional, but my primary focus is on third party risk management, which entails managing the risks that are associated with engaging with various vendors and external parties that provide my organization with essential services. So to answer your question, how I got into it, I can tell you right now that there's not a risk and compliance professional out there, I'm pretty sure, that said when they were 5 years old, I want to be a risk and compliance professional.
Right.
Like, it's just not that, you know, like, it's just not like a fireman or an attorney. Like,
okay.
It's not sexy, for lack of a better word, right?
Okay.
So what happened was I worked at the big banks. I worked at Chase, Bank of America, and even some smaller financial institutions like a credit union. And the banks or the regulators actually got increasingly more stern with how banks are regulated. The focus shifted to protecting the consumer, which is a great thing. It's great to protect the consumer, but it also fit the need for more risk and compliance professionals to aid in keeping these organizations aligned with government guidelines.
Okay.
So I'll never forget the day that my manager came to me and he was like, hey, Heather, you know, our last audit didn't go so well and we need help in risk and compliance. And I was more in an administrative role at the time. And I was like, you know, what do you want me to do about it?
Okay.
And so because I don't know, you know, risk and compliance, I don't know.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, so I'm going to send you on some trainings. I'm going to send you on some business trips. And, you know, he sent me out of town and different conferences and gave me resources like webinars and books I could read. And I just fell backwards into it. But I'm happy that I did because it changed the trajectory of my life. Risk and compliance professionals are probably the highest paid employees in most organizations. Not saying I'm doing it for the money, but hey, it certainly doesn't hurt.
All right,
long-winded way to answer your question.
What's that? Okay, no problem. Well, I'm glad that you're in the position, and you know, most folks don't know, but we worked together some years ago, and you know, I always knew then that you know, you were going to be going places and doing things. You always had that in your heart, and you are, you know, you just were, you know, a great person to have communications and all that stuff. So glad and happy.
Likewise, Stan. Likewise.
I appreciate it very much. The second question I have for you, what would you say, what are some of the key challenges that you face in integrating the principles of your current position in risk management and compliance practices within the industry of banking?
The simple answer, people.
Okay.
People are always a challenge because...
Amen.
Sounds like you have a little experience with that.
anyone, as you know, that is coached or managed, and even, I mean, when I look at the NBA Lakers, I mean, the coach, basically he's a coach, but a manager, and it's a challenge when you get all the personalities together, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
100%. Yes. Thank you for saying that. But what I mean by people in my role, I mean, my fellow colleagues, and because when you're a risk and compliance professional, the majority of your job is getting into folks' business, you know, getting into departments' business and to gain understanding of how their processes work to determine if there's improvements that are required in order to align with government regulations and requirements. Nobody wants you in their business.
Right.
Nobody wants you snooping around, going through the paperwork. You know, like, no, who wants that? You know,
right.
So
right.
They often feel judged. They feel like we're, you know, there to go, gotcha, you know, when that's definitely not the case. And I typically will lead with whenever I need to, like, look through their processes and understand how they run things. I'll lead with the fact that I'm trying to partner with them and understand where their weaknesses are, because we're all in this together, and we all know it. I work for a bank, so if the bank gets fined for an area that we're weak in, that's going to affect all of us.
Right.
Not just that specific department. It's the entire bank. It's a ship. And I'm like, if one part of that ship gets damaged, then the whole ship sinks.
Right.
So you want me to catch it and not Mr. Regulator, Mr. and Mrs. Regulator.
Exactly.
And so they're usually like, okay, Heather, how can you help? You know, so, but it is a challenge at first.
All right. Well, that's good. I remember the times I was in management when the corporate high level ranking management team would come to the office, and I can't, you know, we all get a little nervous because we, but the thing is, my manager and managers above me let us know everything they were going to look for. So of course we're already doing a good job. So we kind of just made sure. And usually if they came, it was just some simple notes, which was, we were kind of glad when they left.
Listen, to that, I could tell you, when it comes to like an auditor, they have to say something. Right. Even if it's pristine, they have to look like they're doing their job. So even if they're like, well, there was one I not dotted, you know, they're right. Gonna, there was a piece of trash in the break room.
Right.
Anything. So that means you were doing very well. Man, I can tell you
that. Do appreciate that. All right, coming to the next question here I have for you is, can you provide some examples of successful programs or initiatives that you've implemented within your organization and what impact they've had on the business?
Okay, so as a risk and compliance professional, part of your job is to ensure everyone is aware that they play a role in being in keeping the organization compliant. Everybody is tasked with that. So what that means is a lot of times we are called to train and facilitate courses on different compliance subjects. Since risk of compliance is not really a fun subject, like I said, it's not sexy, I try to interject fun. You know me, Stan, you know, like I like to bring levity to situations. You know, risk and compliance is very serious. So
right.
The way that I try to interject fun is I have what we call third party Thursdays. And that's just, I facilitate different games like Jeopardy, Family Feud, et cetera, that are risk and compliance based, third party risk based. And it's a lot of fun. I facilitate virtually. We leverage Kahoot. I don't know if you've ever heard of Kahoot, the game-based learning platform where you can key in your answers Everyone can collaborate and key in their answers virtually through the Kahoot game.
All right.
And so it's just a way for to engage colleagues, and there's prizes they can win. And at the same time, we're helping them attain some risk and compliance knowledge. So that's one initiative that I'm really proud of that has helped my organization stay on top of risk and compliance.
Well, that's great that you can, you know, make it fun, because and you already know this as a manager, if it's fun for your team, they're more willing to want to do it. And then after it's over, then they have something positive to talk about.
100%.
That's
well be found as well. And they look forward to it, and they actually study for it. And studying means that they are attaining that knowledge that we want them to have. So it's a win-win.
Very good. Let's see. So next question up I have for you is that what strategies do you employ to foster a culture of inclusion, accessibility within your organization, particularly in traditional risk adverse environments?
That is such a beautiful question, Dan. I love that question. And I'm not a DEIA professional, diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, right? Professional per se.
All right.
But I am actively involved in an employee resource group that is dedicated to supporting specifically Black employees and our allies. Our group focus on creating pathways for underserved communities and to have access to knowledge and opportunities that they might not otherwise encounter. So we try to facilitate exposure, new ideas, concepts, and bridge those gaps and empower individuals that face systemic barriers to access with information. And I'm very passionate about this. I'm specifically passionate about this with our youth, with our in underserved communities, because a lot of times, and I know this is a heavy topic right now, but a lot of times people conflate diversity solely with race and ethnicity. They think that an organization just needs to check a box based on the color, but it's not just the color of your skin. It's the richness of perspective, you know, diversity in ideas, different people with different backgrounds bring different experiences and knowledge that they could bring to the table, which provides different viewpoints and a different way of thinking, which ultimately leads to greater creativity, better collaboration, more success. So whenever I'm interacting with the board, because in my role, I do have to interact with the board or with executive leadership, I explain that I don't want them to feel like they're checking a box in order to include this many Blacks or this many Latinos or this many Asians. You're doing this because you need that diversity of perspective, a perspective in your organization, and ultimately it benefits the organization as a whole, or in my case, the bank that I work for. So that is something that I work towards every day. That's important to me.
Excellent. I think I'm not sure if most people understand. I think that you and I do, that the word inclusion actually means everybody. Would you agree?
Yeah. Last time I checked, and like the dictionary term definitely means everybody.
And I understand, as a guy that used to work in media as a former producer at one of our top stations here in LA, one thing I found out was when I worked there was that, the news business is a business, and ratings is what's the most important. I shouldn't say the most important, but maybe one of the most important things, because there are sponsors that, they're looking at a certain amount of eyeballs based on what the stories are. So the stories have ratings. The higher the story, the more they're going to be able to see the sponsors and commercials and that kind of stuff. So, in a regular news program, there's a minimal amount of time, as you might know. I talked to a news director once. I had a story I thought would be good, and he smiled and he said, "Stan, sometimes we just can't tell them all at the same time." and one thing I wanted to mention, of course, this is mainly for my audience, is that, TV now is actually taking a back seat to something like YouTube,
yes,
streaming services. So,
yes.
And of course, we have now mobile devices. So a lot of folks are, they're watching. They may not watch the local news. They may not, or if they want to watch it, they could watch it on streaming. If they miss it at 11 o'clock at night, they can go in the morning and they can check it out. So we have a really amazing technology that we have. And I'll date myself, but when I was coming up, believe it or not, radio was the big thing. That's how long ago that was. And TV.
You did not come along with radio.
We had TV, but back then it was like you could only get like four or five stations.
You don't see, I know about the radio.
Radio was, and then what began to happen was that then TV began to overcome radio.
Radio.
And even now, radio is not what it used to be. Now we have the satellite stuff. So a person can, listen to, if they want, they can listen to one channel of whatever Kevin Hart's talking about.
Exactly. You don't have to rely on live TV. I mean, yeah. I came along when I remember running home from school so I could watch my TV shows, or having to rush home from work and catch my program. And that's long gone, right?
A thought. Yeah, and actually a good point with live TV, and that is that live TV is one of the more popular things because a lot of folks want to see sporting events live. So a lot of the time when a sporting event comes on, a person, especially with the NFL, which is a multi-billion dollar corporation, folks want to look at it in real time. Like I have a friend that, he's one of my best friends. He will watch the Laker game from beginning to end. He may record it. He still has a DVR, by the way. I'm not going to put him out there, but it's okay. So I was sharing with him the other day. I was like, I used to have a DVR a long time ago, but I found out I couldn't watch all that. I would never catch up on watching all that stuff. Now I have on demand now, so I can watch it. But, it's interesting how time is changing and evolving. And now, of course, with the advent of AI, it's even becoming, more prominent.
Yes, AI is a game changer.
Yes, most definitely. And let's see. Last question. Well, this might be the last question. I might have one after this, since we do have time. Let's see here. With the things that I think I know the answer to this, but for the sake of our audience, if you could share, and that is, could you describe how your position, and you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, describe how your position is beneficial to consumers?
So, I mean, I've said throughout this podcast that risk and compliance is not sexy. I'm certainly not, we're not the face of the bank. We're not selling anything. But, we do play a crucial role in ensuring that we maintain the highest standards of risk management and compliance. So by managing third-party risk and making sure that initiatives are aligned with the organization's risk management framework, we do safeguard the interests of the consumers. This means that when consumers engage with us, with our bank, they can trust that their financial well-being is being protected. So their transactions are conducted in accordance with regulatory requirements. So ultimately, fostering a environment of risk and compliance helps the consumer in a way that they cannot physically see, but it is protecting their interest. And I always, the salespeople always get, the credit for that. But I'm like, we're in the background making moves that you guys don't see. We're protecting the customer. So I was really happy that you asked me this, because no one ever directly connects a risk and compliance professional to the consumer. And it's never brought to light exactly how we're protecting both the bank and really ultimately them. We're protecting because our interest is the consumer.
Very good.
Yeah.
So I was just going to say that and that's sort of the way that I thought the answer would go, because what I love about what you're doing is, and correct me if I'm wrong, to me, you're like an advocate for the consumers, you're an advocate for the employers, and you're an advocate for the bank, making sure that things that need to get done are being done in the most proper way, especially, and with the government regulations, that there's, as you already know, there's a lot of laws that have to be followed. So, and so it's understandable that, and even though you may not, when the sale comes through on a $1 million project, we know that part of that happened was because they followed the rules.
Put you in my pocket and carry you around. And whenever I get any feedback or any pushback from the business unit about risk and compliance, I can just pull you out and you can say that whole thing all over again.
I don't know. Maybe I can make a recording where you could just hit your phone and my voice comes on. Because Heather Johnson is here to help you.
Love it.
Yeah. So the
that was perfect. Yeah.
Very good, because especially my experience with sales. Actually, years ago, I did sales, and the companies I worked for, they had that sales element, and of course, understandable, sales is, they're wanting to make their money, because most of them are commission based, but they know they have to follow a certain protocol, and by doing that, they're probably going to make more money by following the protocol, as you already know.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's exactly why there's so many regulations now, because it's all based on how consumers were handled years back, where they didn't understand what they were getting. They didn't understand the cost. They didn't understand, that it was to their detriment what it was that they were purchasing. So the consumer definitely needs to be protected.
That's excellent. Some years ago, I worked, this was back in the 80s. I was a salesman for Canon USA. And of course, my sales were we called it having a clean sale. But every now and then, if someone didn't follow procedure, in this particular case, the sales manager would say, sorry, I'm going to have to nix this deal because you didn't follow X, Y, and Z. So then it'd be like, okay, well, and then some opportunities, they may have had to go back to the customer to do a different type presentation to say something to the effect of, there was something I didn't cover that I do need to cover that with you. So let's do that. And then, of course, a lot of times, the sale would go through. But of course, on the corporate side, when we're dealing with corporate places where corporate is in New York or it's in Chicago, it just might take that salesperson a little longer to get that check. And of course, they learned from that by following the rules and the things. And of course, sometimes it was just an honest mistake. So it's like, okay, well, you can correct it. And instead of getting your check Friday, it'll come in 2 weeks.
There you go. That was a very good explanation, because I think back to scenarios where I was the consumer, like purchasing my car, and I feel like the car salesman didn't disclose certain things. It didn't help me to understand certain aspects of the sales that I later on, I paid for. And I look back on it and I'm like, if they would have just mentioned that, I would have been more informed and I would have been able to make a better decision.
Interesting. I was going to mention something about someone else, but they're a well-known celebrity and I don't want to mention their business, it would not have been anything harmful. We're just about to wrap up. So I wanted to see, I've been asking all the questions, which I normally do. I wanted to see if you had any questions for me that I might be able to answer either on the business side or about the podcast.
Yeah. So the podcast, they are weekly.
My podcast, I don't have a regular schedule.
Oh, okay.
But it can be weekly. It can be daily. On mine, I essentially do it when I feel like I have enough information and a guest that is going to have a positive impact on either business or entrepreneurs or something like that. And then I come to them and go from there.
And you are, I don't know if this is too personal, but you're currently not working like a regular 9 to 5.
I would say correct. I'm not currently working a regular 9 to 5. And I'm fortunate that in my younger years, when I was in my 30s, I made some pretty good investments. And as you know, the number one is, all the experts tell me, is investing in real estate is still the number one. So I did some real estate investing. I did some stocks and 401k and some of that stuff. And so it is, I did pretty decently at it. But before the fallout happened in, what was it, 2000, I think it was 2008 or 2009 when the bottom fell out of the real estate market. So I could actually, several years before that, two real estate agents that I know in 2001 both told me, hey, in a few years, this is all going to come crumbling down. So they were right. I mean, but they always said, you know, and you know, this real estate market, it has its highs, it has its lows.
Oh, yeah, peaks and valleys for sure.
And so what I did was, when I saw the shift beginning to change, when banks were no longer doing some of those loans that maybe not should have been. But that was, of course, the real estate market was hot. So, of course, you know, if the house appraises at $50,000 higher, then, you know, it was easier to do some of the loans. But what it did was then it just things kind of got corrected. So that's all the time that we have for now. I want to say thank you so much for being with me on the podcast. And we look forward to keeping track of what's going on in the future. Thank you so much and take care.
Have fun with you. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay.
Stand the Man podcast with business and entrepreneurs.